Welcome to Call with Dads. Let's talk.
Fancy, but for a couple dads that have to full-time job and still trying to make ourselves look like we know what we're doing, it works. It's not the shiniest thing in the world, but a lot of people use it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and speaking of shiny things, which hopefully it's not too obvious of an entry into the topic, but the whole issue, like tonight's whole issue, is basically there was a video, and I sent it to the group, to our group of Call of Dads, that there was an Andy Griffith episode clip that where Andy Griffith was telling this hobo or bum kind of guy that he needs to shove off because he's being a bad influence on his son, on Opie. And I remember I've seen this clip in several different lengths and such, but what it boiled down to is that the hobo is trying to say, well, let the boy make his decision. He can decide my kind of life or your kind of life. And yeah. Andy Griffith says, well, that's the problem. You can't let the boy choose. A boy will choose for every chance he gets. He's going to grab the shiny little object. Whatever the shiny object out there, he's going to reach for that and grab it because he doesn't know any better. And
yeah.
He says once that object has its hooks in the kid, most times it's too late for the kid and the kid has to deal with what he's dealt with at that point. And as a dad or as a parent, it's our job to make sure our kids are not grabbing that shiny object. That we're trying to teach them that as they grow up and they're out on their own more, that just because it's shiny
and as a dad,
because it's easy, it's not always the best option. You know what I mean? So, I mean,
yeah, the easiest path isn't always the best path.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about your history growing up completely, but I know like me, I worked in a junkyard or a scrapyard when I was a teenager. I've worked in a restaurant and grocery stores, things like that. And I was around all sorts of people.
Yeah.
And like I was, let's just say I had access to drugs and to alcohol and to a whole world that you wouldn't really expect much out in a farmlands and such, but it's funny what's out there. And as a kid, I wanted the adventure. I wanted the partying. I wanted to do all this crazy stuff to kind of enjoy my life, do what I want to do, et cetera, you know what I mean? So I don't know if I just was too stubborn headed to pick up the lessons that I was taught, but I can tell you as a young adult, as a teenager, I always reached for the shiny little objects that I thought was interesting. And, you know, in my 20s, I drank heavily, partied a lot. If I can say, I had a lot of girlfriends and almost girlfriends or somewhat close friends, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I know that that is not a good thing, you know, but again, shiny objects, once it gets your hooks in you, you just kind of go with it and you keep going with it. And by the time I got the hooks out of me, I was like, probably in my early mid 30s, something along those lines.
Yeah, it's funny how life works. You know, like early on, like I didn't have much going on in my life, and kind of growing up in a broken home, I had like no expectations for, I guess, anything. I didn't do well in high school, like because there wasn't really that backing to be like, hey, you need to get your shit together. You need to push forward. There was never any of that. So like, really the only person I was ever letting down was myself. And it got to the point where, you know, I when I was 18, I originally joined the Army and it didn't work out, and I came home and I was doing nothing and kind of just sitting around for a long time. I was working on some end jobs. I think I worked at a telemarketing agency. I don't know if you have the Bonton where you are, but it was kind of like a department store.
No, I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, just like it's kind of like a Macy's.
Okay.
But I did that for a while, worked in restaurants, worked as a dishwasher, and kind of like my a light bulb went off in my head. It's kind of funny because like my turning point in life was don't know if you remember back in the day when they used to have like those Everest Institute commercials where it was like a guy and like he'd pop up. He's like, "What are you doing? Like, call the number." That was like my motivation because I'm like, I was sitting at home on my couch. And I'm like, is this the best my life is going to get? And then I would say my own failures were my best motivator. So I think once I got that mindset, I never really let a lot of things derail me once I got to that point. You know, like I think when I was 21, 22, that was like my summer of like heavy partying, heavy drinking. Like, you know, we were going to the store and buying 30 racks every night and waking up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Not being a proper member of society. But I think these are all good lessons. And I think it's almost important that we go through this stuff because I feel like that's the part where wisdom is born, is through this stuff where, like, and you say you're going towards the shiny stuff. Was there anybody that ever really tell you like this is the wrong way, or was it like
I've had people tell me so for me it was kind of the whole thing of I had people making comments like, man, you're drinking. I'm like, hey, yeah, it's fun. We had quite a bit of a time last night. I knew, but at the same note, on the flip side of the coin, I was also traveling constantly for my job. I was home a short time. I got to see my friends here and there. I was really in a kind of environment, and I'm not sure if I put myself in that environment, but somehow I got inside of it where it just was partying and constant drinking and all this stuff. And for me, what kind of knocked me out of it wasn't by choice, really. I ended up moving to New York for a girl. That was a stupid idea, but everything happens.
It's always a great idea chasing after.
Oh yeah. Especially moving across a couple states and all this stuff. But when that fell through, I moved back to Ohio. I already had my house rented out, and then things just started falling apart for me. I was basically couch surfing, living in my truck with my cat, things like this. And what knocked me out of the drinking life and all this and the craziness was, first, I got a job in Maryland, moved away from everybody I knew. I was in a place where literally I was like by myself. I had no comfortable place to go out to drink. If I went out to a bar, it was just everybody was with their own groups. People didn't really, it was kind of a cliquey area, I guess. I wasn't able to connect with anyone new in the area I moved. Then it just, so I sat at home, I had some beers. Then I started working on different things. I started getting more back into getting myself to learn new tricks, learn new things, study things online. And I would sit and I'd study and I'd have some beers. And I know the next thing that happened was, is I got married, and getting married changed everything for me, where I cut my drinking back immensely. And then after that, when my kid was born, I think when my first kid was born, that's really what changed the whole thing. Because when I got married, I cut my drinking back. I quit smoking and I started working to really make my life better so that I could, I guess, be worth her in that sense. Once my kids were born, it was no longer, because when it was just her and I, if something happened, she went on her way, it would suck, but it is what it is. You know, when the kid's there, it's a whole different area, a whole different ball of wax. And that made me push even harder. So for me, those three events ended up changing me to the point where if I don't drink, I'm not really worried about it. You know, I go a week, a couple weeks without even having a beer and not even realize, oh yeah, I might open a bottle of wine once a month and something like that, or whatever it is, you know. Don't get me wrong, I do enjoy, like, I killed myself trying to build up a shed over the weekend, right? And found out that I had to, well, we're not talking shed building, but either way, I was sore as the Dickens afterwards. And so I opened a bottle of wine, sat down, and relax. But I didn't get drunk. I didn't even get a buzz, but it was just relax. I enjoyed my wine. It's nice, sweet, and with a few ice cubes. Fantastic. It's hillbilly wine. What do you say? But the fact comes down to is that I basically found something in my life other than myself that allowed me to say, I need to push this, those shiny objects away. They're no longer something I want in my life. And I think, like, for me, my biological dad gave me lectures about smoking weed, right? And when I was a teenager, I didn't listen to him. I smoked weed. Part of that to me was is he lied to me. He told me all, made it sound like he never did it when I knew he did it. His friends that he's known his whole life got drunk and told me stories and such. So I knew the truth. So somebody trying to lie to you, telling you not to do it, everyone I knew around me, they would drink and no one ever thought anything about drinking. No one ever thought about smoking cigarettes. The crazy life was kind of real prevalent in almost a lot of the areas I was in, right? So the big thing people gave me warnings about was weed, not the drinking, not the smoking. But one thing I'm doing is, like, with my son, my daughter's not old enough for this conversation yet, but my son, he is 8 years old. He's old enough to understand what I'm telling him. There's some things you don't want to do. You can drink when you get old enough to do so, but you don't want to do it to get drunk. You're going to regret it. You're going to do it several times. You're going to have many hangovers in your life, and hopefully you don't, but it is a possibility. You don't want to be stuck in that trap. I explained to him, I know from personal experience, I explained to him that as he gets older, I'll explain to him the hardships that it caused, things like that. Because I don't think that all wisdom comes from experience. You can learn, like, look at it. And I want to hear your opinion on this, but you're given a task to do. Now you have the option of either trying to pound away for hours trying to figure it out, or you can listen to a YouTube video for 15 minutes, or somebody that can tell you for 10 or 15 minutes on do this, this, and this, and this, and then walk away. And then it takes you maybe a half hour after that. Which route do you think is going to be more valuable in the long run for you? Learning it by yourself, or having somebody that you know you can trust to tell you about it, and then learning from them, going through the necessary steps. That way, once you get through those necessary steps, you're more apt to learn how to deal with it, how to fix the problem in less time and with less heartache, less anger, less effort.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, like you say it like that, and I kind of think of my life in that analogy. Like, I didn't really have, as a dad growing up, I didn't really have the role models or anything to, like, kind of teach me. So, like, there wasn't really that wisdom. And I think, dude, when you say it that way, basically my life has been a YouTube, like, tutorial. Like, right. I got to look it up, see how it was done, and then I have to put it into practice. And then, but I think from the standpoint of being, like, a father and teaching, especially your sons, because I mean, your goal when you have sons is to teach them to be good men. Is that I take what I do in the practice and you make modifications based on what you do. Like, it's all trial and error. So, like, I will never say I'm perfect at something. But, like, you start doing something and then you learn different ways to do the same thing. And like I said, like, sometimes, like, it'll take you like 5 or 6 hours to do a task, and then the more you do it, you learn different ways to do it, and eventually it becomes shorter. I don't know, like, I guess it's different when you have, like, from your own experience, especially when your experiences are bad, or like, they turn into bad things. I think being able to have the self-awareness that, like, there are consequences to these actions. Like, honestly, I think the one thing I live by is that you learn way more from any of your failures than you do from your successes. I even made a YouTube video about this like the other day about my journey on YouTube. It's like, I think one of the great benefits about being like a newer creator is that like you have the ability to, like I've done over like, I think almost 450 videos at this point. And like I'll film them and I'll go back and watch the ones I originally did. I'm like, ugh. Like it's like cringeworthy. Like I'm like I had no presence. Like I was like, I was just reading off a teleprompter. Like my personality wasn't shining through, but then like I see now, but the only way I got to be to where I am now is by doing all the practice I did. Like, hey, this is where I messed up. Let me change this. Let me change the way I look at the camera. Let me change the way I do my script or the way I introduce myself. But that's like where I think it's like when somebody goes through something, you're more apt to listen to them, especially if they're able to turn around. Like I think like when you talk about like the hobo and the Andy Griffith show, it's like, yes, you live through things and this is the easier, but where was the turning point? Like I think like once if you go through all that crap and you turn it around and you make something good of it, I feel like that's like when people want to listen to you and your wisdom actually matters, because it has meaning and it has something's positive come out of it. Like the reason why I always listen to my dad always tried to like tell me his stories, but like, and it's like, dad, you were just a screw up. You're still a screw up.
Right.
Like, you can't give me lessons when you didn't learn anything from it. Like the lessons I learn are from viewing it and not wanting that for myself. I think the biggest thing that turned me around was when my mom died. Mom died when I was 21 years old, and it's like I didn't want to disappoint her,
right?
Like, because I'm a firm believer that, like, I believe there's a heaven, and I believe that, like, if we truly believe in Jesus and we believe in God, that we go to heaven. And it's my interpretation that once in heaven, you have the ability to check on the people that you love. And like, I never want my mom or like anyone that passed away before me to look down and be disappointed with what they're seeing, because I'm like, if they can see me all the time, they can see I'm a screw up. And I don't know, it's like I find the screw ups to be incredibly motivating. Like I grew up poor, and like I feel like I always have that feeling like that could still be my life. I think the biggest issue I have in life is like imposter syndrome. I think it's really hard for me to feel like I deserve to be where I am at certain places. Like when I started going to college, and I wasn't a good high school student. And I went to community college, ripped my butt off, and then I went to a 4-year college, and like I didn't feel like I belonged. Like I felt like I had to try 10 times harder to be an average student. And then even like in my career, like I finally gotten to where I feel comfortable where I am, but like the first 5 years, I'm like, I don't belong here. Like I'm gonna find out I'm an imposter. So I mean, like I honestly think things like that, like as a parent, I think kids can genuinely, I think they can understand sincerity. Well, I think they can understand like what I'm telling you, I'm coming from a genuine place of love. They can sense, I think even more than adults, like I feel like kids are able to see like kindness. I feel like they're able to see genuineness. I mean, that's why I feel like they're so easy to like, to trust each other and be friends. Like, I look at my son, like we go to the playground all the time, and he like makes best friends with every kid that's ever in the playground. But like his family, like he's still super shy with all of them. Like he's still super hesitant to talk to them. Like it's like, it's, I don't know what tangent I'm going off on, but like, I feel like you gotta be the genuine article for people to listen to you, and you gotta be genuine for them to actually receive it. Like, again, like you say your biological father, like he would lecture you, but like where's the love part of it coming from? Like if you sit down and your son, you tell your son, listen, like, I want you to understand like these type of things that can come along in your life. I've lived through them. I've gone through the bad. I've overcome, I've become good. And now I'm here being the best version of myself for you. Like, I feel like that kind of conversation, I feel like if your dad had that with you, I feel like you wouldn't have been like, who's this guy to say what I should be doing?
Right. And I think that's the big thing. Like, it sounds like we both agree that without having the trust built up there, and you know, it's one thing that I listen to a lot of people talk about talking to their kids and doing this and doing that. The one thing I don't really hear a lot of these dad groups or dad people talk about is building the trust with your kid. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm definitely not a touchy-feely, let's be all emotional kind of a person. But on the same note, with my kids, I do show them affection. I take care of them as much as I possibly can. And I do everything that is needed to make sure that they have a good life. And I'm also honest with them, and I tell them straightforward. And I'll joke, Daddy knows everything. I see everything that happens in this house. Don't think I... But the fact is they also know that if I tell them, this is bad for you. Well, why can't you tell me? You're not old enough to understand. When you get older, I can explain to you. They understand. They might not like it. They might want to know why I'm telling them no. But like, there's TV shows that I tell them you can't watch because there's a agenda to push the alphabet people's thing onto kids. And I say, no, you're not allowed to watch that. It's not appropriate. Why not? They have a bad message. Okay. He asks why. My daughter asks why. And I say, you know, I want you to understand this when you get older. You're not old enough to understand it, to understand the stuff that's all involved in. As you get older, we'll talk about it, blah, blah, blah. And then they trust me and let it go and move on because they know that I built that trust up with them prior. So the guidance I'm giving them, and I think that's the big thing, is a lot of parents are either, they're trying to be their kid's best friend. And don't get me wrong, it's great to be friends with your kids when they're adults. But when they're kids is not the time to be friends with them because, and I'm a big person on this fact, is you're a parent. Parents are much, much bigger than what a friend is, because I have friends that I've known for, I don't even know how long. And I can go a long time without knowing what happens with them. Like, I think I've mentioned on here before that I've had friends that I've gone so long without talking to that I found out they died, you know? And they're like, oh, yeah, they died like a year and a half ago. I'm like, holy criminy. Why didn't I know? They're like, oh, well, no one knew how to get a hold of you. I'm like, okay, well, so be it. And it's what it is. But when it comes to like, my brother, for an example, my brother and I are not close friends. I think we're at a point in our lives where we get along well enough. He is fantastic being around my kids. My son really enjoys being around him. My daughter adores my brother and his wife, and I'm happy to all ends about that. Him and I, we don't really have a whole lot to discuss. We're completely different ends of the spectrum. I'm tech. I'm into learning, and well, he's into learning, but he's into hunting, fishing, the outdoors, which my son is too, but in a different way. So the three of us kind of get together in a middle ground for the three of us, you know what I mean? And my mom, her and I have, other than our history together, have not really a whole lot in common, you know what I mean? We have the same values, we have the same outlook. We want to see good things, et cetera, et cetera. But my lifestyle and her lifestyles are completely different, especially considering I have kids and she doesn't now. Well, she has kids, but we're...
I was like, you're her kid.
Yeah, I was going to say she has kids, but she doesn't have kids in the house. So unless I'm coming to visit with my family, then she also has grandkids. So, I mean, the whole thing comes down to is that I still talk with my family, even my brother, who I'm not overly close with, I still talk to. Again, friends, I've had tons of friends that I thought were like family who just vanished. And that fact of some parents are trying to be their kid's friend instead of being the parent, building the trust, building the future projections of, you might not be happy with my decision now, but if you put faith in me, you get past this, you're going to get past this anger, past whatever upset, you're pouting because you got spanked and your feelings got hurt, blah, blah, blah. Put faith in me. I will make sure that you go and become a good person by the time you leave my house. And I think that is the big thing to help them avoid that shiny object, is honesty, trust, and being true to being a dad.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think the dynamic that's weird is like, I try to think about what's my parenting style, and like, it's weird because I'm very disciplinarian of him. Like, when he does something wrong, I mark it and I make sure it's not a joke and I make sure it's not a game. But then, like, I looked up like gentle parenting. It's like, I have aspects of gentle parenting as well. So it's like I'm in a discipline. I'm going to mark the moment and I'm going to I get down his face and like, I make him make eye contact with me. And like, when he does something wrong, we communicate directly what he's doing wrong. But I'm also from the gentle parenting part of it. It's like afterwards, like I pick him up, I'm like, listen, I love you. And like, I want you to understand. I don't want you to just know that something is wrong. I want you to understand why it's wrong. And like, you're talking about like the kind of being like the gatekeeper to stuff, like, is like, I know there's been times where my son's like, I want to watch this. I want to watch this. I'm like, no, like, even like simple stuff, like you got to gatekeep from them is like, he was asking about like Jesus, and he was asking about like what happened to Jesus when he died. And I told him like, well, he died for our sins. And he's like, well, what happened to him? I was like, well, you're not ready to hear what happened to him. You're not usually to know that he passed away for us. So like stuff like that is like, you gotta tell him like, or communicate with them. Like, it's my job to keep you safe and keep you guarded from things that can affect you emotionally and physically. Cause like, I remember seeing things as a kid, like on TV, and like, they scarred me for a long time. And it's like, right. I need to be able to stop those things from being in his life. But the number one thing is like, his consistency. And I say this like to say, like, I've always been super like physically playful with my son. Like, we've always wrestled. I've always gave him hugs. I've always like thrown him around, twirled him around, make him do flips and stuff like that. And, like, throw him up in the air. And like, I would take him to the playground and he would start getting on the playground equipment. And I'd be behind him, and when he would fall, I would catch him. And like, I tell people, I'm like, there's nothing you can do right now that's going to change the dynamics of your relationship. Unfortunately, it's built over time. And like, the one thing I try to emphasize is like, my dad sucked as a parent, and like, now he's reaping the rewards of that, is that my son's not in his life, he'll never be in his life, and he has to deal with that because of his actions and the way he carried himself. And my thought process is, I want to be a grandparent. Like, I want to be around for my kids. But I think the one message I push to people is like, if you don't put the time and effort in now, you don't deserve what comes down the line. Like, this is where you earn that trust. You earn that. And like, one of the things, like, I ended up being early on as a parent that, and not really having those positive male role models, like, I sought out guidance. And one of the church leaders of the church I used to go to, I go to a different church now, but like, there was like a Father's Day, and his kids, I think one was 26, one was 23 and 21. And like, they're all starting to be successful. And like, I was just really drawn to that. I'm like, cause you're at the end of the journey. Like, I'm like, what did you do to get your kids to the place where everything you gave them equated to this well-rounded person? And he's like, listen, he's like, it's not your job to be their friends. Yeah, you can be friendly with your kids. Like, mm-hmm. I play with my son all the time, and like, we do stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you're the parent, and you need to step up when those times are right to be that person. So like, I break it down like in the 6-year increments. Like, I know we talked about this our first conversation. Basically, like, the first 6 years is, it's disciplining them. Like, basically, like, teach them right, wrong, mm-hmm. yes, no, please, thank you. And then from ages 6 to 12, that's your teaching phase. That's when like you're teaching them about life, you're showing them what they need to do, you're teaching them math, you teach them history or science, you teach them how to navigate society. And from ages like 12 to 18, that's your guiding phase. That's the phase where you take the first two phases you learned, and now they have the tools they need, but now you're more of you're behind them, guiding them, instead of like gatekeeping everything. But again, it all starts with consistency. It's like, these people get mad that like their kids don't listen to them, or they get mad that like they get pissed off when they get their video games or their cell phone taken away. And like, that's built their consistency. Like, you built this, you built what you built. Like,
right.
you can't get mad at your kid for you for the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years doing nothing but putting an electronic in their hand,
mm-hmm.
and then you want to take it away. It's kind of like a druggie. Like,
yeah,
this drug dealer, this druggie uses drugs to make themselves feel better for all these years, and then you go take it away. Like, how do you think he's going to act?
Right.
So it was interesting. Like, it's weird, like, where I get parenting lessons from. It's like from places like you wouldn't expect it. I was watching this one comedian, I can't remember what his name is, but he's like a British guy. He's very like deadpan.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he was doing like a Q&A, and he's like, somebody asked in the crowd, like, what about technology or something like that. And like, do you want your parenting to be easier, or do you want it to be hard? He's like, if you want it to be easy in the beginning, put them in front of a screen. You want them to be a good person, you want it to be easier later on, don't put that in front of them. Do what you need to do early on in life. Be tired, get down, play with them, teach them like real life things to do. And then when they're later on, like right now, like my son's almost 8 years old, and like we didn't start playing, like he plays video games now, but like he didn't start maybe until the end of 6.
Yeah.
So now it's like he'll be playing on TV and I'm like, hey, it's time to go. Never argues with me. Like literally just says, okay, turns off the game, turns off the TV, is ready to go. I'm like that means, I think those victories is like, is what means a lot. I don't know if you watch any of my videos, but like my last video I put up about parenting was like taking the time to celebrate your successes and your victories. Cause honestly, like, I feel like parenting's like learning to walk. Like you do it every day, you get a little better. Eventually you can like run, but you don't see each day, you don't see like the transition from the day before, like how much you've gotten better. And like, I think of like little moments of like the victories of like, hey, bud, can you get off your game? Turns it off. Like that wasn't done on accident. That's like, right. Not like a, like that's a trained way. He knows like, okay, I'm being told by dad. He's telling me to do something. He's not telling me to be a jerk. He's not telling me to do this. He's telling me because there's something else I need to be doing. So like, that's like my biggest thing I try to tell people. I'm like, you need to start the hard work now,
mm-hmm.
and then you will reap the rewards of your hard work. And just take those times to, because I think the biggest things we do as dads is like we constantly wonder if we're doing a good job.
Right.
Like we're always like beating ourselves like, am I doing the right thing? You always like, yeah, second guess like decisions you made. And I know you go back to kind of having like your moment of like when it's time to move on. And I think it's like the ability to have self-awareness is like so important. Like, but like whenever my son does something bad, like I wouldn't even say bad, just like does something stupid or a mistake, like, mm-hmm. I try not to react right away. Cause like, again, like I never want the reaction to the action to be the reason why he doesn't do something. Like, I want it to be like, he understands not to do it because I told him and showed him that this way. Like, I remember we came home from a Halloween parade thing, and he had like a glow stick, and he's like, we're in the living room, and he's like spinning it around, and it flies off the stick directly in the TV, and the TV shatters. It's like a $1,600 TV.
Ugh.
And it's like in that moment, I'm like, this next moment, this is going to be, like, you can't change something for the good in one moment, but you can definitely ruin something in a moment.
Oh yeah, without a question.
So I'm like, if I react a certain way, I can lose everything I did. Like, because like, dad's a jerk. I don't want to listen to him anymore.
You know, I think, and it could be me, I think my kids are well understanding if they break something and I get upset about it. They understand that they did something wrong, and I am upset. Their actions caused me to be upset. And I calm myself down. I don't do anything outrageous. They know I'm upset. I walk away. Then I turn around and I talk to them. All this. And like you said, a moment can destroy a lot. But I think making your kids, you have to at least let them know that you're upset. You're angry about them. You're allowed to be angry about something getting destroyed. It's a TV. Like I've told my kids many times, if you want to break the TV, break it. Go for it. I've had this TV for 20 some years. Once it's broken, if The only way where I'm buying a new one is if it dies on its own. If it breaks, we don't have TV. And they're like, well, what would you watch? I'm like, I don't watch TV.
The grass grow.
I'm like, I haven't watched TV. I haven't watched a real show in I don't know how long at this point. And so I make it clear that the consequences are more severe for them than it is for me. To me, I will just throw the TV stand, the TV, all the stuff out, cancel all my subscriptions, which are all stuff that they watch, and be done. So I think, one, they do need to know that their actions do affect us as parents in a way that we're going to be upset. We're not always going to be happy with them. We're going to be either upset, disappointed, frustrated, whatever emotion you want to think about. We're going to go through the whole spectrum more times than you can ever imagine as an option. But I think they need to know that also, even though you're upset, that anger is going to pass. It's going to steam away and everything's going to be fine because we still love them. We still are there to take care of them. We just need to deal with our emotions as well, in the sense of, you broke a TV. What are you thinking? What, I told you to stop doing this. Now we have no TV.
Yeah.
You're going to be the only kid in your co-op that's going to be talking about books and no TV because, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. So I do have,
I think
one
the
question.
One thing that changed me was, I remember when me and my ex were like separating, and like, there was a time where like I thought we were going to work things out. And then basically she kicked me out. And then I yelled at her in front of him, and like, he was genuinely scared of me. And I think that was like the moment that kind of like, that was like my changing moment, where it's like, to see my son scared of me, that was the worst feeling I've ever felt. So I've always tried to use the discipline stuff, because I mean, being in the military, like, and I feel like everybody has their own way of doing things and their way. I guess at this point I've learned to do it that way. So like, I guess there's a need to change it. Like, I've always given him the benefit of the doubt. Like, I know you didn't do this intentionally. You screwed up. This is the consequence. This is what we lost. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to get it back. Next time I'm going to be pissed off. Like,
right.
I might be a lot angrier next time that this happened. Hopefully it's not, definitely not a TV. I'm like, and I was like, he's never broken anything in the house. And the first thing he picks to break is the most expensive thing in the house.
It tends to be how it goes. So you brought up your ex, and I do have a question, because I've wondered about this. Is for you, I picture you making sure that your son knows not to grab the shiny stuff, to try to learn the lessons that you went through, so he doesn't have to. You have X amount of time. It's obviously, we never truly have enough time with our kids, even though sometimes you're exhausted and all this. You just, like, next thing you know, they're teenagers, they're moving out, blah, blah, blah. But for you, your time is split between having your kid with you part of the time, while the other part, your son's with your mother or his mother. And how do you deal with looking at making sure he learns those lessons and is not overridden by what your ex is doing? Or do you guys kind of, I don't know your guys' relationship, if it's good enough at this point that you guys can talk about, this is what I'm trying to teach him, I need you to do this, or whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's actually the one that got me in the church. So I would say, like, she's always been more of the keeping him wrapped in and keeping him, like, wrapped in a blanket, keeping him safe from the world.
Okay.
Kind of just keeping him away from that stuff. Whereas I've always, like, I try to, like, explain to him, like, how we're blessed as a family. Because I think about, like, being a kid and, like, being poor, being on welfare, mm-hmm. not having a car, not having food. And I think knowing the other side of the spectrum and being able to, like, know where mistakes are able to be made, it's teaching him at a young age, like, to be humble. And, like, I think around the holidays is, like, I'm like, you know this thing that you have? When I was a kid, I didn't have it. Like, we're lucky to have it. Like, we've gone places where there's poor kids. I've, like, we've donated toys, we've donated money, and like he sees that kind of stuff. And I mean, we drive, and there's panhandlers, and like he'll see those type of people, or like he'll see people sleeping on the streets. I'm sure you probably don't have that where you are.
I'm outside of DC, so
yeah. Oh yeah, you probably have a lot of them. But I mean, like even those kind of lessons is like him seeing a homeless person on the side of the road and be like, well, why did that happen? Or even like we listen to Elvis all the time, and he's like, well, how did Elvis die? Like, well, he had too much medicine because he was too sad. And like basically, like I haven't got into the specifics of like hard drugs or anything, but like right. I told him like anything too much or something is bad. And I never drink in front of him. I don't want to, like, because I know I can change the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
At least I believe it could. But like we see people act like dumb and like tell them like, hey, that person's over drinking. So like I think I try to like, I don't completely keep him from it, because I almost feel like keeping him from it and not having him be aware that it exists can be worse, because then like you're exposed all to it at once, and like you don't see the repercussions. But if I can like show him like little tidbits, like, hey, this person's acting that way because of this, and then like as he gets a little older, a little more mature, I can like add on to that and be like, remember when this happened and you saw this is where it started. So it's hard, because you have to keep stuff like almost age appropriate, because at some point they're not gonna understand what you're saying. And that's what I have to like think about 90% of the time, is like you got to think about like how kids are just aren't, their awareness of the world just isn't the same as ours,
right? Well,
like the funny thing I get that from is like I tell my dad jokes all the time, and I'll tell him and it's like you have no idea what I'm saying, because like he doesn't understand like puns, he doesn't understand like that things have double meanings,
right?
So it's almost like the ignorance is bliss, but like I think just starting to like get them aware that there are bad things, that there are like gatekeepers. I mean, he doesn't have to know all the bad things in the world. He just right. needs to know like sometimes there's bad people, and I'm going to do my best to identify them. So when you're old enough, even if you see some of these things start to happen, you can identify that's not something I should be near.
Right. Which is a good thing. I mean, I don't know. To me, it's kind of the ever-going challenge that we're always trying to be, like you said, we're always trying to make sure that they're learning the right way versus taking that foolhardy, easy road and what so have you. I think a lot of what I see is people, and I can't speak for everybody, but the people I do see, I think they're more into their own life, live their own life. They expect that, well, I don't have to take care of this. Somebody else will take care of this. So I don't need to care and blah, blah, blah. So they go with this gentle parenting, or this free range parenting, or whatever they want to call their new take on it. But I think a lot of people are expecting that they can go on autopilot with their kids. And then as long as they're still around, then they're doing their part. When, like, my wife cooks dinners and I do a lot of the dishes. I do all the dishes, well, 90% of them, and do laundry. It's the kids don't think about why the laundry is getting clean, folded, and put away. They don't think about all the time that my wife spends in cooking and preparing and planning and what so have you. It's a lot of work for the kids to do what they do and not think about like the things that some people had to think about. Like, I don't want them to get to the point where they're worried about, oh, well, I have to buy a 5 pound or a 10 pound bag of potatoes so that I can eat something. And I could tell you get tired of baked potatoes pretty quickly when that's the case of something you have to do, you know?
Yeah.
But I want them to be more mindful of their finance, of like, don't go down that partying road and spend your money on the partying. You know, you can go have a beer with a coworker, like, but don't have a case. You can go out and have a good meal, but don't order dinner every night, things like that.
Well, I think it's like there's ways that you can like teach them stuff like that, and like ways that they can understand it. Like, I mean, I even think of like like I guess I would say like for like drinking, like instead of like using that analogy, be like if he was like to ask like, well, what's getting drunk? And I'm like, well, imagine instead of just having one piece of cake, you had 20 pieces of cake.
Right.
And then you're feeling full and you're feeling disgusting, you're feeling sick. That's what overindulging is like. Or like, hey, you want to buy this toy? Like he's been starting to learn earn an allowance for like doing chores and stuff. And he'll go to the store and he'll buy his toy. And then I'm like, well, that's your money you're spending right now. And then he'll go to try to buy something else. And like, well, you already spent your money, so you can't buy it. So it's like, I think you can start teaching them like actions and consequences at a pretty young age. And you can do it in things that they can understand. Like, hey, if I eat too many cookies, I'm gonna feel sick. I'm not gonna be able to leave because I can't come out of the bathroom, or I can't go swimming. Like, I think that's why I was like, I think the one thing I love about the New Testament is that like Jesus' ability to have the parables. I think like the ability to be able to explain things in the ways that the people, the receivers can understand them, to basically like, take like the lessons and kind of like teach them the greater lesson with something smaller that's easily able to understand. So I mean, like again, like going into like, hey, this is what you see, like, and you can kind of keep it in a controlled environment. But and the world sucks.
Yes.
Like I've been teaching my kid like safety stuff for pretty much as long as I can remember. Like, hey, if somebody tries to take you, this is what you do. And now like I teach them like active shooter training at home, like just in case, like, because this is something I have to worry about. It's like basically I'm like just talking about there's bad people in the world. And you can like use like I think it's one of the things I'm grateful for about having my faith background and like as and my background in Christianity is like you can kind of explain these things biblically. Like you can tell them like there's demons in the world and there's people that have demonic stages. Like I mean even like the people that like the evil people that Jesus like casted the demons out and like he cast them into the pigs and all the pigs ran out and like killed themselves. Like it's just hard because like you can't be like you can't do this because you can't be like what? It's but yeah, parenting is not easy. It's exhausting. I think it's sometimes it's mentally exhausting, like doing the mental gymnastics of trying to do the right thing. So there's so many parents that just want to do what's easy. And like the gentle parenting, it's like I think you can have components of different parts of it. Like again, like with my son, I'm very disciplinary. Like I set my expectations for him. If he doesn't do what's expected of him, and there's consequences. But at the same time, I also give him hugs, tell him we love him, give him like make sure that he knows he's always loved and that he's never had to question that part of it. But then like there's parents that like ask their kids for permission. And I know we talked about it in our first conversation, like the difference between like single moms and single dads, whereas like single moms need to feel like that they're being like their best friend. And because they feel like if they're not being their best friend, then they won't love them.
Right. Well, let me do this. One, I'd say I took plenty of sinus medicine earlier today and it started to kick in. So either one of two things are happening. One, I'm a doze off, or two, I'm gonna start saying stuff that I'm not even realizing I'm saying because so before that happens, how about we kind of wrap this up and then let people know where they can find us because I don't want to start spewing crazy things and then go back and watch and go, "Oh no, what? No." So, if somebody wants to reach out to you, where do they go? What's the best way to get in touch with?
So Dad Mode Activate on YouTube, at the Dad Mode Activated. You can find me on Instagram. I've gotten off TikTok and trying to get away from Twitter just because they're not really the messaging behind a lot of the content. I don't think is beneficial towards single parenting, so or parenting. So
Right.
I've kind of gotten away from those. So you can find me on Dad Mode Activate on YouTube. You can find me the same title, same at on Instagram. Feel free to send me any messages, comment on any of my videos. I want to make new videos in the future. So if you guys have ideas of stuff you want to hear about, give me some ideas.
Sounds perfect.
And here's my
I
new merchandise coming soon.
was gonna say, I saw the hat. Weirdly enough, I'm wearing a shirt, best dad, best period, dad period ever.
And
we
I like it.
We sell these shirts on the website as well, thecallwithdads.com. So
I'll have to get one.
They're well worth it. So, and then of course, at callwithdads.com, you can find our audio shows. We have the LinkedIn, or not link, again, sinus medicine. We have the YouTube channel linked to the website. So with that, you can find about anything you want for us. You can find us on our social medias, which most times all we're doing is doing AI posts with the videos. I'm real horrible, very horrible about keeping up with social media. So if you comment or something, it might take me a while to respond. But YouTube is where I'm most active in handling stuff. Reach out, comment on the videos, share them, subscribe so that you know when we're doing the live shows or when we have shorts coming out. And that helps us quite a bit as well and makes you well aware of what we're doing. So, Aaron, thank you very much for being here. Everybody else, I'd like to thank you, but we will talk with you later.
Have a good one, everyone. God bless.